Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by Lama Kathy Wesley, is entitled, What is Buddhist Retreat and How to Do Retreat at Home? With so many of us under stay-at-home orders due to the COVID-19 epidemic, Dharma practitioners have asked for ways to deal with extra time they have on their hands while staying at home. In this talk, Lama Kathy talks about the principles of Buddhist retreat and how staying at home can give us extra time to dedicate to a home retreat to deepen our meditation practice. The audio was drawn from her video webcast from home. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to everyone to the afternoon Dharma Talk for Columbus KTC. And it's been great to talk with all of you by email and Facebook over the last week or so to catch up on how you're doing and how your practice is going and how the videos are helping you. So thanks for your attention and for your and sincerity in being here today. So let's begin with a feeling of intention and thinking that we are dedicating this time that we're spending together today to the benefit of all sentient beings, especially for those who are ill or who have are experiencing an ill family member, or they are concerned about the first responders and the health caregivers. So let's keep all of them in our thoughts today. I'm going to start with a short prayer. And this prayer will be in the Tibetan language, since that's how I learned it. And but the meaning of the prayer is that we ask for the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas with us today. And we make the aspiration that that we are in harmony with their wishes for the world to be free of suffering and to come to liberation, permanent liberation from suffering. So if this is a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in. It's the four-line prayer of refuge. Ho sanje chudang so chi chonam la chang chu pardu tani kyap su chi. Daji jin so ji pe sunam ki drola pinchir sanche tu parsho. And now the prayer of the four immeasurables. If this is a prayer you're familiar with, you can join in, but if not, you can join in your heart and your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to all sentient beings. The meaning of the words in English are, may all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness, which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free of attachment and aversion to those near and far. O semchen tamje dewa tan dewe gyutan tempar gyuchi dunga tang dunga ji chutan drawa chuchi. Dunga mebe tewa dhamba tam hendra war chuchi. Nerin chantan hidan drowe tangyen chen pula ne par chuchi. And then finally, a short prayer supplicating the masters of the lineage and my personal master, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, in particular. O Palin Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chi War Pe De Den Chula. Kadrin jembo gane che son te. Kusun tugging a trip sal du so. Okay, thank you. So last week we finished our topic on prayers for a pandemic, and I'm hoping that everyone has had a good week and that you've been able to do some meditation or prayer practice this week to help you keep strong in the midst of all of the change and all of the difficulty that's going on. I think we have a lot of opportunities to practice in our everyday life, and we don't just have to wait until we're sitting on our meditation seat to practice. with the situation as it is. For example, when we think about all of the people who are ill or who are trying to help those who are sick, we can send aspirations of goodness to them and make the aspiration that they are very effective in helping all sentient beings, everyone that they come into contact with. We too have the potential to be a blessing to everybody we meet. And so that's something to also keep in mind, to think that when you interact with other people, think that you're holding a mind of compassion and love for them, and do your best to be patient with yourself and with everybody else, because these are times that are very difficult because so many things are happening. I spoke to another person this week who is suffering a lot from financial hardship because they're not able to work in the midst of the public health crisis. So try to keep these people in mind and be as generous as you can with people who are serving and helping. So today's topic that I wanted to talk about was retreat. And it just occurred to me a few days ago that I had been hoping myself for a period of retreat, almost like a sabbatical, if you will. After having been a teacher for about 20 years, I was thinking, gosh, it would be really great if I could do some sort of retreat. And then, as you know, this past summer, KTD Monastery put on an amazing program where they had 2 months of retreat for people who wanted to attend and receive a specific reading transmission, a sacred transmission of a text, actually a series of texts. And so for that 2 months, I felt like, wow, that was a fantastic retreat, because even though I had to do a lot of work while I was listening, I also was able to meditate, and that was a wonderful experience. And then after that, as you all know, Kempo Carter Rinpoche passed away not long after that retreat finished. And so then I had another retreat of the 49 days of prayer after the great Lama passes away, called the Gongzok, G-O-N-G-D-Z-O-K. Gongzok means fulfilling the guru's wishes. And so as all of us at the Karmeling Retreat Center were gathering, we all did these prayers for the benefit of all beings. And so it was like being in retreat again at the three-year retreat center, which it was another good feeling. So I got a second retreat. And now, just a few months after that, we have the public health emergency, and people are being asked for their own safety and for the safety of others to stay indoors. And so it's almost like a third retreat has been handed to me, and I feel some real gratitude for this. People have asked me, how am I doing, since my husband and I are mainly indoors because we are in the higher risk category. And we go out to take walks in the sunshine, but beyond that, we're still indoors. And I say, well, you know, I was kind of trained for this. My room at the three-year retreat center was 10 foot by 10 foot. And my shrine room here is 10 foot by 12 foot. So I feel like I have extra room. So in any case, I felt okay with being here and being somewhat removed from everyday life. But a lot of people have asked me, well, how is it possible to do retreat in the midst of all of this happening? Well, my thoughts about this and my answer for this will be different for each different person, because many people have intense responsibilities. I know healthcare workers are working 12-hour shifts and more, and that people who have children and animals, they're trying to educate their children at home. They're trying to take care of their animals. They're trying to take care of their homes and their employees. There's so much to do that we maybe could not even think of doing retreat at a time like this. But I would like to talk generally about retreat and make some suggestions that might help you to at least incorporate a little extra meditation practice while you're at home during this period. And if you remember the teachings of the Buddha, the historical Buddha Shakyamuni, he summarized his teachings in what's called the Four Noble Truths: that suffering's part of life, that suffering has a cause, that suffering has a solution, and that there's a path that leads to the end of suffering. And what he's saying in these Four Noble Truths is that we have the power right now to change our experience of the world. We may not be able to have an impact on what happens to us. That may not ever come under our control, but we do have some control over how we react to and respond to those things. And that's within our power. The causes of suffering, according to the teachings of the Buddha, are clinging and fixation. So by clinging to things and fixating on things and clamping down, we close ourselves off from others, and we close ourselves off from our highest good. And so the teachings of the Fourth Noble Truth, the path for coming toward freedom from suffering, the path, the teachings of the Fourth Noble Truth deal with how to let go of clinging and fixation. And so the Buddha's teachings can be summarized by the four statements made by the Buddha: do no harm, practice virtue, and tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. And since the fourth of those is a summary, we then have three things to remember. Do no harm means to not harm yourself and not harm others. Do as much virtue as possible means to take care of yourself and to benefit others. And tame the mind means to meditate and to practice gradual letting go of thoughts and gradual letting go of the causes of suffering. So that's a little bit about the basics of Buddhism and the basics of Buddhist practice. And so most Buddhists will practice some form of meditation, whether it's the quiet sitting meditation that we've all learned and heard about, or if it's the mantra meditation, such as Om Mani Padme Hum, the compassion mantra of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion. Or it could be the practice of compassion meditation itself, Tonglen, or sending and receiving. All three of these practices, quiet sitting, compassion meditation, and mantra meditation, are practices that everyone can do. You don't have to be Buddhist to practice meditation. You don't have to be Buddhist to practice compassion meditation or Tonglen. You don't have to be Buddhist to practice the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. So these are methods of practicing that virtually everyone has available to them. But how, the question for most of us is, how do we fit it into our day? And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. As you know, the idea of retreat exists in all of the traditions of the world, all the faith traditions of the world. The great masters of these faith traditions have practiced retreat. In the Bible, we hear the story of Jesus undertaking a retreat of 40 days in the desert. And then we also, reading the story of the life of the Buddha, we understand that the Buddha spent 6 years in retreat trying to practice all of the various practices of meditation of his day. And so, and when we look at today, modern Buddhists do retreat of all kinds, modern Christians of all types, and beings of all of the different faiths of the world practice some form of retreat. And in the Tibetan tradition of Buddhism, there is something called the three-year retreat, where people disengage from their daily lives for a period of 3 months, three years, 3 months, and 3 days, as a way of engaging seriously in their Dharma practice in order to make some progress in doing away with fixation and accomplishing the causes of virtue. So this idea of the three-year retreat is fascinating to many people. I know when I first heard about it in the 1980s, I immediately wanted to do it. And I went to my teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, and I said, when can I start? And at that time, the only three-year retreat was at Samyaling in the Buddhist monastery in Scotland. And he told me, well, right now, that is probably not going to be a good choice for you. And I said, oh, okay, well, if you say that I need to wait, I will wait. And so I waited for about 9 or 10 years. And then after 9 or 10 years had passed, I had done some meditation practice and some mantras and so forth on a daily basis. And then Kempo Rinpoche said, okay, now's the time. Now you can do retreat. And so he had by that time created his three-year retreat center at Karmaling, and we were able to go into retreat there. But people, when they hear about retreat, they have both a fascination with it, but also a little fear about that. And I think this is normal, because if we think about it, we have a lot of responsibilities in our everyday life, and we wonder, how could I ever give up my responsibilities in everyday life to do a serious retreat? And I think that is, I think, for many people, what makes it hard for them to even imagine doing any kind of retreat, much less a 3-year retreat. I mean, they don't call our daily living, they don't call it the daily grind for no reason. There's a reason why they call it the daily grind. We get caught up in our everyday life, all of our responsibilities with home and work and family, and we find that some of this work that we do is exciting and wonderful, and we feel useful, and sometimes we even feel appreciated. And then, but I think over time, what happens is that we can take on too much responsibility and feel too responsible, and then it begins to grind us down. Our tendency to grasp and cling to the feeling of being useful, the feeling of having responsibilities and accomplishing things, our addiction to accomplishment makes it difficult for us to get away from the daily grind of all of our activities and responsibilities. So this is, I think, why retreat can be attractive, let's put it that way, to some people. And because they get the idea that maybe we can get some relief from our responsibilities. But then the other part of the person is thinking, well, what will happen? What will happen? Who will take care of all of these things for me? How will I get everything done? And so forth and so on. So for them, retreat is both attractive and a little scary. So what happens is that eventually our wish to practice our spiritual path seriously, that wish will bear fruit for us in that we will have something open up for us, some time in our day, some time in our life will open up for us, and then we can see, oh, this would be the perfect time to do retreat. Well, for a lot of people, that never happens. And Kempo Carter Rinpoche had some advice for that. He said, even if retreat is something that you're not really capable of doing, he said, always hold in your heart the wish to practice your spiritual path more seriously and more completely. And if you can do that and hold that wish to benefit beings through your practice, if you can do that, eventually, even if you can't do it in this lifetime, in some future lifetime, you may have the opportunity to do a serious retreat. So that's a little bit about retreat in general. Now, at this moment in time, many of us have no choice but to be in effective retreat. I'm looking out my window right now, and the streets are quiet here. And there are a few people walking and going back and forth, but it's really pretty quiet around here. And so we sort of have no choice but to be in a retreat setting. And I don't know about you, but I kind of responded to it at first by being a little stressed by having all this alone time with my mind. And so I got busy, and I did some writing. I was on social media and, you know, doing all of those kinds of things. But as time went along, I was able to relax a little more with myself and relax a little more with my time. And now it's starting to become clearer to me. If we look at the structure of retreat as it's practiced in the Tibetan tradition, you can say that if you want to do it in the most strict way possible, you would not see anyone and not go out anywhere. Well, we're not really capable of doing that at this point. We have to have interaction with the world. So instead of being in strict retreat, we will be in what is called loose retreat, where we can see people and interact and so on. And not only that, we will probably not be capable of doing the 6 daily sessions, which kind of go all the way from morning to night and back again, the 6 daily sessions of retreat. So we're probably not going to be able to do the classic Tibetan retreat. And we probably will not do the 4-session retreat that is another classic text, technique in Tibetan retreat making. So, but what we might be able to do is carve out one time or two times during the day when we can just be quiet. Being quiet, as a person who does public speaking, as you know, as my life's work, is a little strange, but I actually love being quiet. So if we can do that for ourselves and take maybe a half an hour or an hour a day to be quiet and to just be with the world as it is, taking a walk, even in the rain, it can be okay. Taking a walk and relaxing our minds just a little bit, unplugging from the TV, unplugging from social media, unplugging from the news. I've talked to quite a few people who've had news overload, and they say that watching the news just makes them angry and upset. And I like to say to those people, just do a little more, practice a little social distancing from your TV and from the things that make you upset. So for us, doing a retreat at home may not be a classic retreat in any way, but if we can find at least one session in the day where we can practice some retreat, that would be good. In the four-session retreat, there's the first session is in the morning before breakfast. The second session is between breakfast and lunch. The third session is in the afternoon after lunch, and the fourth session is after supper. But for most people, their days aren't structured to have a classic four-session retreat. So they might just choose to do the first session in the morning, because maybe that's the time of day when you actually have some spare time for yourself. What other people will do is that they will look at their day and they'll make a list of all the things that are on their schedule for the day. And they'll look for an open time in between their responsibilities. Like if they have responsibilities with their children or with their job or with their other family members, then they will look for times that are outside of those once our responsibilities are done, where we might have a little extra time that we usually just fritter away by going on our cell phones and doing social media or whatever. And we could actually steal a little time from social media and steal a little time from our cup of coffee and reading the news. We can steal a little time from that to do some practice. So I think for us, that's the way to handle it. There was a teaching once that Thay Sitta Rinpoche gave when a group of us were over there learning from him in India. And he said, we may not feel like we are in charge of our own lives and our own time, but we actually are, in to a certain extent, in charge of our own lives and our own time. And we should start to take responsibility for that and to start to work with it. And so we all have responsibilities, so we have to take care of those. But after those are done, then we can practice. There are the three types of meditation that I talked about earlier. And what we could do, so would that be the practice that we would do? It could very well be that our practice would consist of just 5 or 10 minutes of quiet sitting, and then a little bit of Om Mani Padme Hum mantra, thinking about and sending our love and caring out to all the people of the world. And or it could be the compassion meditation, Tonglen, sending and receiving, where as we breathe out, we think we give goodness to the world. And as we breathe in, we think that we remove suffering from the world. And then as it enters us, it dissolves into nothing and disappears. So when we get this type of practice on a regular basis, it can actually begin to make a change in us. Even if all the only change to us comes from unplugging from our usual involvement in our anger and our other habitual tendencies. Even if all we do is just unplug from those, that's a plus. But if we can unplug from those and then do something else with the time, take a walk, relax our minds, try our best to not worry about things. If we can do that kind of practice, that's a practice that's within our reach. So we have to have goals that are realistic for our home retreat. our goals should be to add, to unplug a little bit from some of our mental afflictions and some of our habitual tendencies, just unplug just a little bit, and then to put something into the mix that's healthy for us, such as sitting meditation, walking meditation outdoors, and so on. If you'd like to practice walking meditation, either with or without a pet, what you can do is, instead of thinking about what your day's activities are while you're walking with your pet or just walking on your own, what you can do is you can just feel the air, you can feel the sunshine, you can feel the breeze, and you can just breathe deeply and be present. And if thoughts arise for you, you can use the same techniques that we've talked about in previous videos for letting go of thoughts. You touch the thought, you let it go. You can even call it thinking, and then return your attention to the technique, which in this case would be walking. Just doing your walking and being with the feeling of walking. So it's my experience with this is that it will take you a little while to find out which practices work the best for you. For some people, quiet sitting is best. For some people, a mixture of quiet sitting and walking is good, and so forth and so on. The important thing is to make a plan and stick with it. So, for example, you might be sitting and meditating quietly, and then suddenly a thought will come to you like, oh, I should be doing mantra instead. And then you switch impulsively to something else. What that's doing is increasing your impulsiveness, because it's, in essence, you're feeding your impulsiveness by just going straight with whatever is on your mind. So it might be better to have separate sessions for each of these types of meditation. Within your session, for example, you might start your session with a prayer of taking. If you're Buddhist, you would start your session by the prayer of refuge, taking refuge in the Buddha as your teacher, the Dharma as your path, and the Sangha as your community. And by doing that, you turn your mind toward awakening and enlightenment. It's a statement of direction, according to Sitra Rinpoche. Refuge is a statement of direction. He puts it in his English. He says, we're saying destination Buddhahood, which I think is delightful. But once we have done our prayers saying, I take refuge in the Buddha as the teacher, the Dharma as the path, and the Sangha as our community, once we've done that, then we think, well, I'm going to be practicing for the next few minutes. I'm going to practice quiet sitting meditation for the benefit of myself and others, and then do it. If you remember from one of the previous talks, I talked about using a set of beads as your timer for meditation, putting it in your hand and moving or advancing the beads one at a time, in-breath, out-breath. Move a bead, in breath, out breath, move a bead, and so forth. And by doing it this way, in breath, out breath, you can get several minutes of meditation by going all the way around one of a set of beads. And this, then you can conclude that short mini session of meditation. And then if you have some time, then you can practice compassion meditation. Again, the resources I have put in the comments section of the YouTube video, those resources include Kenpo Carter Rinpoche's teaching on how to do Tonglen, which is how I teach it. I just read directly from his book, Dharma Paths. I think I got it right here. And this is the old 1980s edition of this book, or 1990s edition of this book. The newer edition has a new cover and does not have all the dog ears on it. But on page 118 and 119, Kenpo Carter Rinpoche talks about how to meditate on compassion using your imagination through the practice of Tonglen. And if all you need to do is take that resource, read it, and practice it while you're sitting on your seat. You could complete a simple practice of Tonglen in 5 minutes or less. Then, if you still have time, you can practice some of the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra by reciting it quietly or softly to yourself, Om Mani Padme Hum, and so forth and so on. And by doing that, that you are able to place your mind on the sound of the mantra. And so by doing these things, you can have a short retreat period in your day. Now, those of you who are already students of Buddhism, you may have already talked to your teacher and have specific practices that your teacher has asked you to do. My teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, said that whatever your teacher has given you as your main practice should be your top priority. It should be trying to get that done every day. And then the second priority would be any other practice that you have made a promise to your teacher or another teacher to do. And then the third priority would be anything that you have permission and teaching to do and the wish to do. So those are your priorities. Main practice first, and then the any what they call samaya or promised practices. And the third is any practice you have permission for and instructions in how to do. And so the protocol was given to me years ago by Kempo Carter Rinpoche, and I give it to all of my Dharma friends now to help them prioritize their practice. So when you're doing retreat, a couple of things may come up. One of the things that may come up is, believe it or not, ambition. Can you imagine having a Dharma ambition? It almost sounds like an oxymoron, you know? When Kempo Rinpoche talked about this, what he was getting at was he said your ego fixation, which is I, me, mine, and making everything about us, our ego fixation, which is the cause of so much of our suffering, it can actually infiltrate our Dharma practice also. And just as it has not worked for us in our everyday life, it will not work for us at all in our Dharma practice. So our spiritual life can actually be co-opted by too much ambition. Our ambition might be something like, well, I'm going to be the best meditator ever. Or I'm going to go faster through all the practices than all of my Dharma friends, and they'll see how great I am. I mean, we actually think like this sometimes. Maybe I should just say we all think like this. But what I really mean is I think like this sometimes. And so what we have to do is we have to recognize that that's not useful, that that's not helpful, and that we have to find a way around that. And so one of the ways around that is to notice that we are experiencing a mental affliction, and then say, wait a minute, this ambition has never helped me before. I am going to abandon this ambition, and instead, I'm going to do the right kind of practice for me for the right amount of time in the right way. And I know it sounds like it's simplistic, but it sort of is, because I think what it happens to us is that we try to make Dharma, our spiritual life, really complicated, but it actually can be kind of simple. And when I talk about this Dharma ambition sometimes, I talk about it as our own personal style of confusion. You may or may not know this, but we all have our own style of confusion. Some of us might tend to be more angry or more mercurial. Some of us may be a little bit more sad, or maybe some of us feel competitive or jealous. I call this our style of confusion. We would rather not have this style of confusion. If all things considered, we would just rather not have it. But we do have it. And because we have it, it's something that we have to work with. And so this style of confusion actually can help us if we notice that we're experiencing it, and if we notice that that style of confusion is not helpful. So two things have to be present. We have to know we're experiencing our confusion. And number two, we have to know it's not useful. Now, that's a big ask, because for a lot of us, our competitiveness and our anger have been what we've used to identify ourselves and to use as a form of strength. Let's use just anger as an example. There's a reason why I'm saying this, because this is a problem I have, and maybe you guys have too. Anger can be a real problem. And so sometimes I think, oh, well, that person said such and so about me, they don't like me, and so forth and so on. And so then we start to fixate on so-and-so and that person, and then we just go round and round, and then we have the we have a possibility that we might cause harm to that person, and we'll take that moment to do it because we have been working on that for the whole time. And so what we have to try to do is when those thoughts and feelings come up, you can almost feel it in your body. I use the term the sort of tension of complication, like you're having a day when everything is going well and you feel, you know, very happy and it's all great. And then suddenly something happens. Somebody writes you a letter, or somebody looks at you on the street and puts their finger toward you, or whatever. They don't, you are now suddenly complicated. You are completely messed up by this. And at that moment you become very, very angry. And so that you can, but you can feel it in your body. Your brows go knit together, and then your face gets all tight and your body gets tight. When you feel that complication, that's the time to notice that you're feeling something. Take a step backward, just one step backward, and say, I am experiencing, and then fill in the blank. I'm experiencing anger, or I'm experiencing frustration, and recognize that it's not possible. And so as it's not positive, excuse me, it's not a positive thing. And so what we have to do then is, once we recognize we're doing something that's not positive, we have to actually take a step backward. Trungpa Rinpoche, in one of his books, said, we have to give ourselves a Dharma talk. In other words, we have to give ourselves a little bit of spiritual brotherly or sisterly advice and say, this thing that I am about ready to do is not helpful, and it's never really worked before. And so as a result of that, I think we need to back up. And this is really interesting, because if you start doing this while you're having an argument with someone and they noticeably see you backing up from the conflict, it might freak them out a little bit at first, but it's actually okay, because you know where you're going. They don't. So the reason I bring this up is that for many of us, sitting on our meditation seat is our idea of retreat. Sitting on a meditation seat in the morning, noon, and night, and so forth, that's our idea of retreat. But if you can use this technique of watching your own emotional reactions and changing your mind at that moment, that could actually make your retreat wall to wall. You can do it even when you're not at home on quarantine. For example, if you recognize that you're feeling angry, you can actually do something else. You can mentally wish well for yourself and for everybody else, for the person who's coming at you. You can mentally wish them well, even if you can't do anything. The other thing that you can do is that you can begin to imagine that goodness showers down on them or rains down upon them from whatever Buddha or Bodhisattva you have the most faith and confidence in. I have actually been involved in arguments where I was really being unreasonable, and suddenly it occurs to me that I am really out of line. And so I visualize a Buddha over the head of the person I'm arguing with, and I try to shower them with a golden light, even if I'm making a mistake with my words and actions. So there are many things that we can do to change our mind, but we have to first notice what we're doing, and then back up, and then make a different choice with what we do with our mind. And if we can do that, then retreat doesn't just have to be about, oh, I'm going to sit for a certain number of minutes a day. It can be about how we're going to change our whole life and how we work with ourselves. Now, I see we have a little bit of time left, so I want to say one more thing about retreat, and that is that that the situation that we are in right now, the situation that we are in, it has given us a unique opportunity. The outer world has gone quiet for the most part. The world on my street has gone quiet for the most part. But inwardly, we are less involved with things right now, unless we're, of course, watching television and plugged in and getting angry at the politicians and all the weird things that are happening. But if we can unplug just a little bit and begin to take a break from our own confusion, this could be a really time full of possibility. I am on social media. So today I did see Pope Francis's comments about the spiritual possibilities of this time of quarantine. He said, he, of course, was giving his To the City and the World address today and or yesterday. And he said that this the storm that we are the storm that is this disease. It's like a storm that has come down upon us. And he said it has exposed our vulnerability as human beings. And it has also exposed the fact that we are not invincible and that we need each other to go forward in this world and in this life. And he used, of course, a biblical story, the story of Jesus and his disciples in the boat at night when a storm comes down and Jesus is sleeping in the boat and the disciples are trying to wake him up and asking him if he doesn't care about them because he's not paying attention. And then he, of course, wakes up and admonishes them. And then with his meditative power, he calms the storm. And so Pope Francis uses this example as the idea that we are now sort of in this boat together, this world of disease and danger together. And that we, he says in his address, we're called into solidarity with each other and the hope that we can somehow become supportive to one another and help one another in this time of difficulty. And he said the thing that made me really delighted was that he said that this time of tribulation, he said, is also a time of choosing. He said, because everything has slowed down for us so much, he says the quotation I wrote down here to read was, it's given us a slower pace of life and time to choose what matters, and then what passes away, a time to separate what is necessary from what is unnecessary. It's a time to get our lives back on track. And that was just such a moving statement, and I wanted to share it with you because I think that now, while we are unplugged from our daily lives for many of us have been unplugged for several weeks, and we know based on the projections that it might be several weeks more that we are in this unintended but gifting retreat, that we actually can begin to make some changes in our lives right now that we would like to keep when this is over. So we can see the things that have caused us so much pain and fixation in our lives and make an aspiration during this time to let go of those things and to be less pushed by those things and to take the time to strengthen whatever spiritual practice we're in. If we're humanist, to strengthen our humanism. If we're Jewish or Islamic or Christian or Buddhist, to use this time to strengthen how we feel and to strengthen our empathy for ourselves and for other people. Because I think that now that we see we have to rely on each other so much, we're relying on the kindness of others. I mean, if it weren't for the people working at the grocery store and the pharmacy, we wouldn't have some of the things that we need. And if we didn't have friends or relatives, you know, those of us who are homebound would not be able to survive in the midst of this. And so if we can take advantage of this time that we are here and take advantage of this time when we have some quiet to make some changes, perhaps adding to our everyday spiritual practice, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and making a commitment to ourselves, You can mark it on a calendar if that helps you. You can have a friend check in with you if that helps you. Did you do your meditation today? Did you practice today? What we'll find is if we make a commitment and the commitment is small enough, it has to be small enough. If we make a small enough commitment, I call it my minimum daily meditation. I have a minimum daily meditation. It's just like 5 minutes long. And if I can do that every day, I will feel as though I have made progress. And so I started doing this minimum daily meditation a number of years ago, and I was on a streak for years and years and years. And then, of course, as personal disasters and things like that happened, it changed. But I'm still on that commitment, and I'm still trying to do it. So in any case, if we can make this commitment to add just a little bit of practice to our day every day, then when this crisis passes and we're back in our daily life, hopefully those places, those little pins that we've put in our day saying, I will meditate in the morning, or I will meditate in the evening. If we put a little pin in our day and make a commitment to it, then that will last even after this unintentional retreat is over. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. And I think that based on this, that if we can do some practice every day, that this is, I guess, the homework that we'll take away this week. Next week, I was going to continue talking about retreat next week, but I think what I might do next week is something a little different. I might request your questions, and I might do a 45-minute talk on all of your questions. And what you can do if you have questions and you're on Facebook, you can leave them on in the comment section of this video, and then I will write them all down, or you can message me on Facebook, and I'll get all your questions that way. And if you're on YouTube and not on Facebook, you can email me at Lama Kathy, LamaKathy, at Columbus, Columbus, KTC.org. LamaKathy@ColumbusKTC.org. And I'll get your questions, and then I'll take care of your questions next week. I'm not good with technology, so I can't read the comments, and I'm not even sure if I've enabled chat on YouTube, so I have no idea. My hope is that next week at this time, I'll be able to answer your questions. There is a small chance that this broadcast may move to the Columbus KTC website, but I don't think it's going to be next week, but it will be soon. For now, just keep watching here, and I'll keep posting events. I didn't do it this week, but I'll make sure I do one next week. So I guess for now, that's all for today. And I want to thank you for watching this this webcast, which I have been doing on behalf of the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center in Columbus, Ohio. I, of course, have to say, if you have the opportunity to visit our webpage, the ColumbusKTC.org, you'll find out about our every Sunday activities. We have activities from 8:30 in the morning Eastern Time on Sunday until 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. We're teaching meditation. We're teaching Introduction to Buddhism. We have a 9-week course that you can join anywhere. You can join it on class number 7. You can join it on class number 1, and it's being provided through our Zoom platform. So you can check that out on ColumbusKTC.org. And by the way, I'm really grooving on all the little icons. Thank you for sending messages and so forth to me while this has been going on. But if you can visit ColumbusKTC.org, that's great. And we also have a chant every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Eastern, and we have midday meditation on your lunch break on Wednesday at 12:15 p.m. Eastern. And all that, you can find out the how to get into our Zoom on columbusktc.org. So let's conclude today with a mental aspiration, making the mental aspiration that whatever goodness that we've accomplished here today, may it be of benefit to everyone, and may all of those beings, especially those who are ill or who are taking care of those who are ill, may they all be free from danger, may they be free from suffering, and may they come to liberation. So we'll sit quietly for just a moment with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you, everyone, and thank you so much for being here. And Om Mani Padme Hum, and we will see you next time, okay?
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.